Peace, family. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Pharaoh Entertainment. We're your host. I'm Horace the Pharaoh.
It's the young force of nature, Don the Ascended.
And it's the grand uprising, Rod the God, back at you with another banger.
Ooh, where do you new titles come from? Hold on.
I just freestyled that, bro. I'm like, not putting out.
Oh, God, like I freestyled this bit.
Okay, well, as you hear, we got even more grandiose names, so you know how to address us, you feel me, when we walk in the building.
Yes, sir. And
of course, to everyone listening, we want to emphasize to follow the IG page at fresh.pharaoh.ent. Every follow counts, you know what I'm saying? Help us get the name out there. The views are skyrocketing. We appreciate all the support. Make sure to leave reviews on wherever you leave podcasts. Rate us 5 stars because we 5 stars, nothing less than, you feel me?
Hell yeah.
And without further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump into this episode. So you all read the titles, Eternals Decoded. If you haven't watched it, you should probably still listen anyway because you clicked it. So let's go ahead and jump on.
Spoilers alert. Please. Right.
So how do we convey, before we even jump into this decoding of this, how do we even address what the Eternals is? Especially, you know, we come from a background of being superhero nerds, and even we had limited background on it. So how do we explain it to someone who has no idea what it is?
I would start off with defining what eternal means. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is something that's without end or beginning, right? Lasting or existing forever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So these characters, like, when you think about it, they're on such a different scale than most of the other characters of the Marvel Universe, right? Like, they problems, the mission that they on is in a completely different, you know, magnitude of what everybody else is on, right? Like, they dealing with stuff before creation itself exists.
They get there when the planet just formed. Like, they're right.
You know what I'm saying? They on some, we finna start a civilization a billion years in the future type shit.
Facts. And I think if you watched the movie, whether you liked it, thought it was boring, whatever your view is, I loved it. So that don't matter. I don't care what you think. I thought that shit was amazing. But on a metaphysical standpoint, it was also just saying the stuff we've been saying in this show for years at this point, and stuff that people have been saying for even longer. You know, I think this is it's like a cosmic juxtaposition. You know what I'm saying? It represents this cosmic juxtaposition because it displays this aspect of what humanity does to you in the ego. Like, for example, think about how all the characters in the initial beginning of the movie knew about their mission, what they had to do, but in that effort to be human, they lost sight of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because I feel like if all you know is the mission, I mean, it's easy to, like, you know, there's nothing to compare it to, right? But after they were given that time off to learn themselves and explore their interests, they went back to their mission they originally had and looked at it in, like, a different, you know, perspective. They're like, why are we doing this? Why do we just act with no, what's it called, call to reason? Like, why, what was our purpose and all that stuff?
I mean, I feel like that's going to be a side effect of coexisting with those people. Like, if you're, you know, and for their sake, coexisting with humans, even though they're so much less advanced than they were.
And I think what really emphasizes, like, I think what it is trying to emphasize is that that's a byproduct of having, of being human or having this humanity aspect, because they didn't have this issue on any of the other planets they did this to. This is once they got to Earth, once they got to this reality, they lost sight of the mission. And I think that represents us, the people. Like, everyone comes here on a mission, but we get lost in the humanity of it and we forget the mission. You see what I'm saying? It's so much, like, it's so many avenues we can go with this movie and break it down. It's hard to even pinpoint where to start. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I just say we start off with go by character. Like, you know what I'm saying? We can do a breakdown of each one real quick.
Of course. Ooh, that's good. That's a good start. You know, because all the characters, of course, are based upon deities of ancient civilizations, whether it's Greek or whatever or whatever. But besides even what they represent on, like, the mythology, you can take it deeper. Like, for example, I think Icarus represents the old Christian mindset, the old Christian, like, way of life, that refusal to change. You see what I'm saying? That fear of change. And because of that fear of change or addressing what is, it led to his actions of betraying his own family. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it also shows, that's looking at it on that human level. Like, he represents the old Christian mindset in a world full of people realizing you feel outcasted. And, I mean, it is what it is.
I think he represents people that are just closed-minded in general, or have gotten to a place where their beliefs are so ingrained into them to where they can no longer even fathom, you know, something other than their beliefs being right. Like, right. He went to the most extreme of measures
to ensure that their mission was fulfilled. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's cool, you know, be devoted to your mission or whatever you think your mission is, but you get to a point where you fighting your entire family to one on 11.
He was going to kill all his, like, multiple lifetime long teammates and the love of his life until the very end of the movie. Like, I will kill all of you and for the mission. I'm like, yo.
And really, the rest of the characters represent just, before we break it out individually, I just think the rest of the characters represent the divide between, but let me just break it down, I guess, from the comics. The comics, the idea is the Celestials came, they experimented on Homo sapiens, right? So you got the Deviants, the Eternals, and the humans were the balance. What this was represented in the comic book is that the Deviant was your lower polarity, your lower self, and the Eternal was your higher self, and the human was that state of balance. But the only downside to that state of balance is because you don't understand or even know about that. Remember, the humans did not know about the Eternals and or the Deviants. So they weren't aware of their higher and lower selves. Therefore, they're oblivious to it by nature. You see what I'm saying? So they would tap into their deviant nature or tap into their eternal nature without recognizing, which is why you got things like the wars that was, you know what I'm saying? Eternals and deviants represent simply both polarities, the positive and the negative. Those are both aspects of you. You see what I'm saying? Because of course, the movie gonna have the movie details, but the idea is the human was the balance between the two.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the human is, to me, it's like the middleman, because you have access to both. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like you can make the choice to access which of the two extremes, right, of the polarities, the higher or the lower. And, you know, that really just depends on the actions you do in your everyday life, your everyday human life. You know, it scales up.
And the difference between deviants and eternals, to me, was light. The difference, you notice how the deviants, they stay in the dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
They try to not be in the light, whereas the eternals, full of light. Their moves were literally light constructs. There was light materializing the matter. And this goes back to a statement I always say, that knowledge is light. It's always been referred to as light.
Uh-huh.
And since light is infinite, knowledge is therefore infinite. That's why people say it's about the amount of light you have in your body. Knowledge is the light. You see what I'm saying? The more knowledge you have, the more light you are. That's where the idea of light beings even came from.
But, like, when I think about that, I also think about how often you see the two, like, polar opposites of power in a lot of movies being light and dark. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Right.
Star Wars, for example, you got a light side, dark side. You know what I'm saying? You're looking at Eternals, you got, you know, the enemy is the darkness. You know what I'm saying? It's so many references to that power, like that light and that darkness being the two opposing forces.
And the bridge, like in Star Wars, would be Force. That is the bridge between the two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Eternals, the bridge between the two would just be the state known as being human. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, because this night knowledge is infinite, you're dealing with it. Because every time a deviant kills an Eternal, they absorb them. They absorb light from them to advance themselves. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It was showing you a depiction of how it actually feels. You consciously and subconsciously evolve when you absorb more light and take in more information. Simply how the main deviant crow damn near became human as a result of killing more Eternals, right?
Yeah.
He gained the ability to talk, to fully walk. He looked more human at the end of the movie before he died, correct?
Yeah.
And it was shown that it was literally showing you. So imagine if the human absorbed an Eternal, they're damn near an Eternal at this point, right? It's all the transgression about light. This movie was all about light. Everything you saw revolved around the light they had in it.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about the fact that if we using the analogy of light to knowledge and looking at how everything was fine with Icarus until his beliefs made him reject the incoming information that humanity needed to be saved, right? And once he rejected that, he started rejecting the light. He started rejecting his family who believed that incoming information. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of cool to see how that's reflected in the main plot of the movie, if you will.
Definitely one of the more important takes, because, I mean, it's a direct comparison between how stuff is operating here. Now, of course, on this plane, I'm not saying save humanity. It's not about saving humanity at all. Humanity is.
Yeah, that is a plot device, you know. Plot.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people are going to take it serious. Like, oh, we got to save the planet because of this. Because though Cersei and Ajax represent this unifying with the planet idea, Icarus still represents the idea of staying onto your mission, too. It's a dual nature between every character. You see what I'm saying?
And, you know, the way I think about it is I feel like it's one of those things where you kind of have to take away your understanding of good and evil for it, right? Because we mentioned earlier how the Celestials, like, their problems are so beyond the human scope of things, right? Like, it's not about good or evil to them. They're on the plane of creation and destruction of the universe and life itself, right? So to them, a little civilization, a humans, although it's everything to us, it's just a, you know, if it needs to be fodder for the creation of the next, then it will be. And it probably has been for, you know, millions and millions of years in their past and would be for millions of years in the future, right? So the way I think about it, it's like I don't want to take away the significance of humanity, but sometimes I think about it in the fact that in the grand scheme of things, we are but like a speck on the infinite map of the universe, you know, a little blip.
And I love what you said about it. The specific celestial in the movie that we see is Arishem. I think that's how it's pronounced, right?
Yeah.
He's known as Arishem the Judge. And he's also in the comic, too. In the comic, the idea is once he comes back after that, well, the original lore in the comic is once he comes down he comes to the planet like three times. The first time he comes to check on the progress, and human history is not humans are the slaves and the deviants are on top, and they just nuke the deviants and then send them underwater and then dip. They was like, "Oh, y'all niggas wilding, get the fuck out of here!" But when they come back the second time, the idea is he comes and he's judging the planet for 50 years, and after 50 years he decides whether the humanity should be saved or not, and whether he gonna nuke the planet or not. And the idea is he represents the feather of Maat. You see what I'm saying? He is the judge. He is weighing the planet. And the planet, in this case, would be you, the heart of the planet, against this feather. You see what I'm saying? Against this celestial gavel, whether it's worth it. And if not, you get destroyed. And by in Egyptian mythos, when your heart was heavier than a feather, it would be eaten. I forgot the name of the little crocodile. It was a little crocodile that would eat your heart. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't so big, but it was like a little small crocodile coming to eat your heart. You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
And what he represents to me, when he said it, he said, we are the curators of the deviance as well. You know what I'm saying? He said, you are simply here to correct my mistake, which shows that in this grandiose message, you are nothing but a speck. You're just simply on a mission. You trying to go against your mission is causing more falters in reality. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He said, and that pretty much to show there is no such thing as good and evil, because I created the evil that you think is evil. You see what I'm saying?
And you know, it's crazy. A lot of the times, you know, just in our everyday lives, we as people create a lot of the evils that exist to ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Don't even realize there's so many things that we think are going against us. We don't even realize what we constructed on our own to make go against us.
Because you keep giving energy to it.
Facts.
The fact that, and this is the biggest thing, even when talks about like the creator and shit like that, the whole idea that the person that sent you on this mission did not send you here to save the world. He just wanted you to make sure. Because think about it like this. The deity, the Tiamat, right? The celestial that was inside of Earth was simply doing what the deviants was doing. Absorbing light. Absorbing energy. The life and the intelligence of the people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, the celestials and the deviants are no difference. They are all replications of their creator. You were created for a purpose and a mission. You come to Earth, you come to this reality to handle your mission. You go through your trauma because you were sent back here for a reason to go handle your stuff. The Eternals represent someone, the Eternals themselves represent becoming too engulfed into the humanity aspect. You lose sight of your mission. You see what I'm saying? Now you got to come back here again. Because when he first realized they was acting crazy, he said, oh, I got to wipe y'all minds again. Y'all acting stupid. You know what I'm saying? Y'all on that nonsense, right?
Right. When they found out that
this ain't the first time.
Right, that ain't the first time. Like, we've been doing this.
Wait, was this their only one? This was the only time that they had, like, time off to live amongst the, like, civilians, right? Other planets, they just did the mission and left, right?
Nah, I doubt it. I think they probably stayed till they died. And too. Because when the planet exploded, the Celestials, I mean, the Eternals that were on the planet died as well, and they just rebuilt them.
Reused. I mean, they were never really alive, but yeah.
And so, again, this also represents your subconscious, too. How your subconscious withholds things from you, because sometimes you aren't ready for it. Sometimes the humanity in you is too strong, and it's withholding the information in within your genetic memory bank for you to proceed. You see what I'm saying? In the film, the whole aspect between what's going on with Arishem and the Deviants and the Eternals is just simply seen to him as the natural order. He said, I'm trying to bring in the people that's creating life, and you're trying to stop this so-called creation.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But, you know, it also begs the question, like, who's to say that the natural order is the natural order? You know what I'm saying? Like, what power... I guess you could say, what power do we have in that say?
To stop the natural order. He said, for example, the planet Earth that they want so bad to be wouldn't be there without the constant cycle of death and rebirth, which it also makes emphasis to. You see the whole cutscene where the Eternals are creating reality itself from the universe to galaxies in the palm of their hands. Yeah, you want to stop that because of your human feelings, right? You see how the Eternals generated human feelings. And that's what released that leg up they had as being Eternals. They reverted back. You see the longing for characters like Sprite to be human. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess in a sense, you could say that the Eternals were getting plagued with the disease, and that disease is humanity because they lost sight of their mission. You see what I'm saying? It's because the Eternals whole aspect is they're part of this cycle process of destruction, death, rebirth. And the Eternals serve the celestial system. You are just a key. You're just a gear in the system. You know what I'm saying?
And simple cog in the machine.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily lessen the value, but you are part of something greater. But the human, your human reactions to stuff.
Yeah. I feel like also. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it also plays a part is because they've done it so many other times, but this is what the one time they were, I guess, became aware of it. At first, it was just unconscious. They just knew they were doing something, and they on to the next. Now they didn't realize that they had led to destruction of so many other sentient planets. So I guess that may be a differentiating factor in it.
Well, and I said that's why I think this is the most important point about why it happened on Earth, because we're talking about the plane in which we come. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The plane that we come to where people get rotted, you know. I don't want to say rotted, but you get softened by your humanity and lose sight of your mission. Icarus represented staying on track with the mission, right? Mm-hmm. Until the very end. And really, another big thing is the whole, I don't know if anyone picked up, but the celestial they was awakened was Tiamat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I heard it. I thought about the Babylonian deity Tiamat from the from the Babylonians. And it's funny, I did some extra research on Tiamat, and it's funny, which is so hilarious what you find about Tiamat. So, of course, Tiamat is the goddess from, you know, ancient Babylon. I think he first appeared in the story known as called Enuma Elish. First or second earliest writings of all time. And she was the embodiment of the ocean and chaos. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so she was, and her brother, who was also her mate, you know how it is with mythology.
Oh, my God.
His name was Aspu, and he was the embodiment of nothingness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so together they were the creators. They were creators. And at the same time, it was this duality, because though they were creating, the idea of creation hurt them. Like, it disturbed their slumber to the point where, because Tiamat and her brother were above. Think about, like, you have the gods and you have the celestials. The gods were like eternal, and Tiamat was above the eternal. So Tiamat represented the celestials as depicted in the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I'm saying, everything we saw in this movie was not new information. You see what I'm saying? What this represented was them stopping creation itself. This is a Tiamat is a deity of creation, and you wanted to stop the creation for your human selfishness, right? Your ego. All this movie did was make it more digestible for you. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This thing, Tiamat, is also in the Bible, and it's just known as she's a person who is just a personification of the sea. Therefore, the eternal stock creation itself. So you think you broke the cycle by doing so, but all you did was add another loop to your problems. Right?
Yeah.
It does make sense. Like, I remember, wasn't the celestial emerging from the ocean?
Right. From the ocean. And on top of that, she was specifically, like, they call her, like, the goddess of salt water in some cultures, too. Right? That's why it was, of course, in the vast ocean. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And she represented chaos and creation. Think about it. You had volcanoes erupting, the whole ring of fire going crazy in the movie. But at the same time, remember, volcanoes brought forth to half the islands we know today. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's never-ending cycle. You telling me the life of billions is, if you put it into the scope, the Eternal said, we're going to say billions to stop trillions. You see what I'm saying? How selfish of an act. It represents humanity. And I'm going to keep, every time we do an episode, I'm going to keep referencing how it goes back to, like, humanity, because once you realize this reality is, I mean, you can say it's a matrix of the test, it's all of that, but you're here for a mission. When you stop your mission or you pause your game to go be selfish in that sense, you already lost sight of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Brother, wait. I was going to say something. Hold on.
No, you got it.
Wait, give me like 2 seconds because it was so far. I don't even remember.
Well, damn.
But even though, like I said, the movie tries to show that it tries to move with this narrative of like. Go ahead.
I got a question. In the myth, aren't Tiamat and Gilgamesh like arch nemesis? Nemesis.
And see,
I just remember seeing that in Smite. I don't know.
That's not the actual mythos, because the actual mythos of Gilgamesh is really dark. It's actually some real dark stuff. Like, he was a rapist. Like, he was wilding. And he was, like, killing people for no reason. He was wild. So, of course, they're going to clean him up, which is why it's funny enough, in the comics, he does not appear among the main Eternals. He's known as, like, the Forgotten One. Go figure. You see what I'm saying? Because the stuff he was doing, they was like, yeah, we're going to have to demote you, homie. You know what I'm saying?
We don't want people worshiping you. No, you don't need that. Like,
right, so he was known as the Forgotten One. So, of course, they try to make him seem more heroic in that sense. You know what I'm saying? Everything got like a catch to it, of course. Cersei, of course, represents the magician Cersei in Greek mythos and whatnot. But in this movie, she represents that nature feeling, of course. That bond, that bridge between humanity and nature. You know what I'm saying? So even you can take, if not looking at it from the occultist aspect and the metaphysical, her power came from just being one with nature. You see what I'm saying? And not even understanding her potential until she felt. Think about it. She was not this strong before she knew of what was happening. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Like, her love for humanity strengthened.
Right. Her love. Yeah, her love. You know, and her, since her power was connection, the more connected she was to the planet, the power she, more powerful she was. You know what I'm saying? The more, look, literally, the more light. Remember about a little light bulb going in their head or their throat? It's literally showing. It's like a movie that shows you what the occultism looked like, or what occultists would talk about all the time. They talk about light and energy. They were showing you and depicting it. It was really base level stuff, but I enjoyed it because I was like, man, I could watch this as a comic lover and a cultist and still understand what needs to be seen. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. But
what were you saying? Don, I thought you were saying something before. What?
You still ain't got it, bro?
No, I was just, you know, talking about the fact that Gilgamesh, you know, his death in the movie and Tiamat's, you know, was going to be birth, but wasn't. I don't know. I was just thinking.
nah, spit the theory out, because then we could probably relate it.
No, it's just, you know, we're looking at duality of life and death. Like, Gilgamesh was the first one in the movie to die.
Right.
I feel like if he comes from the same mythos as Tiamat, so we can make a connection there.
And of course, I was just about to say something. Oh, I wanted to focus more on Crow, the Deviant, too, in reference. Like I said, this is just the evolution of light you see in the body. You can literally see the change with every person he is over. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The first time, he gets the ability to heal. Now he's super strong. After that, nigga was a human.
Was fully self-aware, could communicate, even had, like, humanic features. Like, his face even got, like, human-like.
Bro was an MCU version of Cell.
Honestly.
And you see this understanding because, Crow says something. He says something that's very pivotal in the movie that the other Eternals didn't realize. He said, why fight? He said, we're just a pawn in all of this. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
You realize we are just playing the same game. He then represents the balance to someone. Like I said, he was becoming more human in that sense, becoming that balance right before he was killed, because he wanted to. He then realized we are. He said, "Why are we fighting?" He said, "We might as well be working together." He said, "'Cause we are from the same person." That's when the Eternal reveals, yeah, I made both of y'all. I just sent y'all there because they was a little too wild. You know what I'm saying? It's all about polarity and light. You really can't escape this. Everything, you go back to our little mini series on the seven laws of Tahuti. In this movie, you got all seven. Literally, you got the law of gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got that feminine energy, the divine masculine energy between the Celestials and the Eternals. Then you had the law of rhythm, right? Then you had of course the biggest one was like law of cause and effect, how everything resulted in something else. The Eternals creating life to then feed them, you need something, you know, intelligent life for them to absorb. the deviants were that. And they got out of control. Now you have humans. You know what I'm saying? Now they had the Eternals to clean it up because they were absorbing too much of it for the Celestial giving birth to have any of. And are some against the subconscious? What were you saying?
As above, so below.
Like, oh yeah, definitely.
Like the fact that the Eternals was on the below, walking amongst the humans. Yet they kind of represent like that connection, humanity's connection to the Celestial,
right
above in the cosmos.
And you won't. You know, you can't really escape that narrative and that understanding, because the moment you try to push it away, you lose sight of what the mission is. You know, in the comics as well, Crow, the main deviant, he's it turns out that like the deviants are doing this attack on the humans, and he can alter his appearance kind of like in the movie. And he puts horns on his head and starts attacking the human. Said, "Man, I've been scaring y'all with this for centuries." You see what I'm saying? He made himself like the devil. It was like, man,
he's been devil all this time,
right? He just made himself look like what they call Satan. So all the humans tell him, "Oh man, Satan, the demons are attacking." You see what I'm saying?
So wait, are you saying that he made himself look like the devil to scare them, or do you say he changed his form and they called him the devil, and that's how
they changed? He changed his form and they called him the devil.
I thought you were referring to like how, like, you know, of course Thena was there, and then they named her Athena and made her left mythology, because even though she was first,
that's what No, he didn't look like that. He just looked the aspect of the deviants in the comic was like that. When the Celestials made the deviants, they are when the deviants have sex and have children, they don't come out the same. They come out, the DNA is randomized every time. So two parents don't make something that look ridiculous. It's going to come out completely different. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay.
They might get more grotesque. They might get less grotesque. They just look a mess. They're deviants. They're the deviant gene, which in some places you can relate that to like the pilgrims. Not just the pilgrims. I was trying to think of a nicer way to say it, but
now that was pretty nice, bro. Wow, there's,
and so that's what the deviant gene is referring to. Then you have the Eternals, which is your light beings, which is your people that have conducted the most light within their body, right, to that higher state. Then you got the humans. You have some people that are basically human. It's the balance, but it's also that thread and the needle. You know what I'm saying? You're on the verge of reverting back or going forward. You know what I'm saying?
It's a mixture between the light and the, okay, gotcha.
Right. And Crow in the comics, well, the reason why they had the thing with him and Thena, because in the comics they have a relationship, a on-off type of relationship. And Crow, the humans, when the deviants had ruled the world, he made himself look like they can alter their appearance. So he, at one point, altered himself where he had horns and people called him Satan. You see what I'm saying? And so then when he would terrorize other people, he and the deviants would just change themselves to look like what they claimed to be demons, right? So then you have a challengement of all the religions. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
It doesn't mean they didn't see this stuff, but it didn't mean it was exactly what they thought it was either. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's actually a really
good thing. That thing was true and they went forward.
Right? This is why I tell people also with all these ancient mythos, they're all representing allegory. None of it is true, but it represents allegory. The fact that you can find TMI in the Bible and then take the Bible like it exactly happened and then disregard what the Babylonians rate is pure ignorance, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because what this shows you is that they read stuff and then said, no, that sound like nonsense. We just gonna make them a human. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just turn into a human instead, right?
Man, I've been thinking about ancient mythologies. Like, what were they seeing to come up with these stories?
Well,
and the fact that so many stories are the same between cultures who would have never had any interaction with each other.
Well, I think that's a good lead on too. Even with this concept of the eternal, one, it goes into this theory. I had a conversation about this with someone, but they get too like scientific. No. They have a hard time understanding the actual science. Like, I don't be talking metaphysics. I'm just like pure science. They're like, well, where's the proof? Well, I'm in the experiment. Yeah, go look at it. But there's this experiment that called about the hive mind. You know, this is perfect. This is literally about to link it to eternal. So it's about to be perfect. So they did this test with monkeys on the island of Madagascar, right?
Okay.
And they taught all the monkeys, I think, like how to. They taught them how to do something. I forgot what it was. But it was something the monkeys clearly did not know how to do.
Yeah,
and
I feel like I remember this story.
We talked about it in Dominance Hierarchy. We talked about it in the Dominance Hierarchy episode. And they taught the monkeys how to do this certain task. Then when they went back to the coast of Africa, and no, Madagascar and the coast of Africa are like, what, 50 miles apart, maybe a little more, maybe 100, more than 50 miles apart. And they noticed the monkeys were then doing the same thing over there at that island. That was the control group. And they realized that the animals have this unimind, right? Where they don't even have to communicate. It's almost like innate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Certain things, they're going to learn something just because it's in your genetic memory bank. Homie over there 50 miles doing it, you doing it too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you can learn something without having to physically learn something. It's traversed through the mind. You see what I'm saying? And the Eternals represents this in the movie. It's when they put the little bands on and they all link together.
Yep.
And that's called the Unimind. And in the comics, they do this the same thing, except when it's this person called the Grand Eternal, and his name is Zurus, basically Zeus, right? And so he'd like everybody to the Unimind. And every Eternal from across the planet would merge into this huge embodiment of light. And it's basically like a big old brain, but it's glowing golden. And at that point, the Eternals don't even, no one knows what's going on. And not just Eternals could join it too. Humans could also join into the Unimind too, right? And because I think two humans I was messing with. And they become this universal bond, right?
Okay.
And they then defeated whatever cosmic force they need to by joining this one. So you got like thousands of Eternals that was in hiding. They're like, oh man, the Unimind calling, man. You know, we gotta dip. You know what I'm saying? You got people in the North Mountains. You got
three times like a million fold or whatever.
Right. And that represents that, you know, and that what that represents is the Dark Matter think tank. You see what I'm saying? Ooh, I love when they start connecting like this. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That Dark Matter think tank, we did that episode about 2 years ago. That represents that universal consciousness, right?
Yeah.
It's a collective bank for everybody to pull from, which is how the same way the monkeys from 50 miles apart learn the same thing they pull from the monkeys. You know what I'm saying? It's shared information. Another realization of this is how the Dogon tribe, the way they buried their ancestors, right? Most mm-hmm. people, when they relatives die, they just bury them. And so when you call in from your ancestors or calling from a relative, it'd be harder to get the message because they're not together. What the Dogon tribe would do, say a certain family, they would bury like all the descendants from that one family in like a house in a sense. And by a house, it could be physical house or metaphorical, like they're all by each other. You see what I'm saying? So you have a lineage to pull from because they're all together.
So when they would need like knowledge or what's called in understanding, they would go to the house and they would pick up knowledge from the ancestors.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, cool.
So the idea was, even it doesn't have to be a physical house; it could just be like a burial ground, and they'd be like, okay, this is where such and such family lives. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. So they stay like interconnected in this. Meanwhile, right. This whole
time. And they will pull from that. You know what I'm saying? So when you needed to meditate. Instead of let's say you live in what's like the most middle state in America,
Ohio. Middle like Kansas or something?
Ohio.
Yeah, Kansas. That's perfect. Kansas is like the epicenter of the U.S. So that's perfect. So say you in Kansas and you got a relative who died in Washington, California, Maine, and Florida. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
You pulling from all them different directions, the information might be sporadic. But say everybody in your family died in Kansas. You can pull from all that one energy so it's not sporadic. You see what I'm saying? That's what the Dogon tribe would do. This represents the Unimind as well. They was able to pull from all that energy at the same time.
Concentrated.
Right, right. So it's not sporadic. You see what I'm saying? That make more sense now?
Yeah, yeah. I understand you. I got you.
And so that also represents what I was emphasizing with the monkeys, how they was able to pull from that. As we talked about in Dominance Hierarchy, how we can all pull from that. That represents that dark matter think tank, all of that, that unimind, which we've seen them do in Eternals. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said the Eternals is just base. If you can understand the Eternals, you understood a base level. It gets so much more deeper. But of course, you know, they got to hide it behind plot detectors and everything. But as we know, art imitates reality. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They just representing you. The Eternals just simply represents you elevating it with light in your body. And I feel like even I'm trying to, I guess, how do we define light in a sense? Because I tell people it's knowledge, but people don't seem to understand it. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's like, the way I would try to get to somebody saying, like, when, even like in this modern like media or whatnot, when someone has an idea in like a show or whatnot, what happens? The light bulb pops up, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that. I want to say not spark, but dang, I'm lost.
No, you was onto it. You was onto it because this idea of light is like okay, recently, right, scientists have been, this was like very recent, like a few days ago, scientists actually figured out how to make a ladder matter from light itself. Like, mm-hmm. like Green Lanterns. Green Lantern, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, wow.
So, and I was reading an article on it, and it was crazy because they found out how to make matter from light. This is exactly what the Eternals were doing the whole movie. The difference is they're so full of light, they all had abilities unique from the light they obtained. Nigga shooting pistol bolts. You know what I'm saying?
Shawty making illusions. Lasers. All that.
Technology. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You know,
it all represents it. That's just you at a higher frequency. Because remember, the deviants or the pilgrims got to... Oh, this... Hold on. I'm about to snap for a second. See, this is where the comments come in handy, right? The idea is the Eternals could never be killed. Eternals couldn't die. They could just be badly incapacitated. Or they could be incapacitated forever, but they just couldn't die. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So homie could be in a coma for a million years. He's just not dead. He's just in a coma. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But the deviants, the only way they could even stand a slight chance against the Eternals was through technology. Right? The only way they even conquered the humans in the past during civilizations was through technology. That was their only way of even being a threat.
Didn't Celestial design them to be like uncorruptible at one point? Because deviants are living like, you know, like everything else. Meanwhile, they were synthetic.
Well, they were all synthetic. It was like they messed with the human DNA, and then it's like, oh, we fucked up. We got the deviants. And then he's like, oh, we did a little better. And then you like, we got the Eternals. But then you like, you get the balance and you got that human. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
The deviants were called deviants because of their genome, because it wasn't stable.
Oh, okay.
Whenever they breed it, it came out different. It came out messed up. They came out messed up. They would sacrifice other deviants. They'd be like, oh, he too ugly. Throw him away. You know what I'm saying? Like it was they were like, yeah, put him in the tournament. Just watch him fight the other ones. Like it was that messed up because of how they were.
Damn.
And they could only, the only way they was able to even show power was through technology, similar to the pilgrims. You remember how the pilgrims cannot transcend the same way we can. This is why they focus so heavy on AI. You see the correlations?
Mm-hmm. They're trying to make their existence on this plane, you know, easier because they weren't able to adapt naturally.
Exactly. See, it's a direct tie-in. Direct. And, you know, I would recommend this comic to people, anyone interested, Eternals by Jack Kirby. You know, it's not too hard to read. You can skip a few pages. It's like 400 pages, but it's really like, it's funny because the whole thing is about two humans that were researching about Mayan culture, and they would realize that the Mayans knew about the Eternals and the Celestials and were there during one of the first times when the Celestials that came upon them. And so they had an Eternal in their presence. And I forgot the name of him. No, it was Ajak. Ajak was the Eternal that was there with the woman in the movie who got killed.
Yeah, that little mother figure.
Yeah, he was a dude, and he was known as the communicator by the Mayans because he was the only one that could communicate with the Celestials. You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
And he could only communicate simply as Ajax could because they had the lore, enough light in them. You see what I'm saying? Because the other Eternals could not physically talk to the Celestials either unless you had enough light in you. Ajax represented enough light. Another thing, the Celestials had the power that reverse people into atoms. So not kill you, but they could turn you back into pure matter. You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
Representing that you ain't nothing but building blocks to the universe. Soon as quick as you can be erased, you can be assembled. Right? Mm-hmm. This is why I tell people to not get too engulfed with what's going on in this shell. You're here to go through trauma. You're here through your, and as hard as that is to hear, you chose whatever trauma you came here. Hold on, I was about to word that weird. you chose whatever trauma you came here for. As hard as that might be to hear, all the trauma is here because you chose it, because you knew you had something to work with. Whatever this trauma was, is going to help you. If you get past it and understand it, it's going to elevate you to the next level. You see what I'm saying?
That kind of plays into like the Buddhist principle of universal suffering, how, you know, of course, there's things we're all going to go through, but most suffering is brought upon by yourself.
Right. And it's how people try to be like, you know, you ever heard like you can't compare struggles in a sense?
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, like they would say you can't compare struggles because your battle is specifically your battle. It's not just by chance. No one's saying anyone's is harder or not harder than yours. And, you know, God bless you that, you know, whatever you got going on, you know, pray that you get through it. But it's really hard for certain people to understand that they chose what trauma they went through because that's what you needed to get to where you at. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all, you was about to say something?
I was just saying like that. Everybody got their own path, their own journey. Everybody going through something. I said it a lot. So somebody told me they got problems. Like everybody got their shit they got to deal with. But that's the thing. I don't think anybody's, you know, problems are bigger than the person themselves, right? So even though this problem may seem big, you know, it's your problem for a reason. Right. And whether or not you believe that you can overcome this obstacle, you can. Otherwise, you wouldn't have this problem. So, right. You know.
That also plays into,
Go ahead.
Now, I was saying that also plays into like the pointlessness of like competitive like suffering. Cause you know, like it'll be like, let's say you lose your job. So you think you got it bad, well, this here happens to me. Like that's unproductive. Like why would you judge him by your own?
And see, that is the concept of humanity. That's the ego that wants you to be like, man, I'm doing worse than him. I don't know why he complaining, right?
Thanks.
That's nothing but ego, and that's the byproduct of humanity. This is what the Eternals went through. Remember how they was there for the mission, and it wasn't until they got too attached to the humans that they lost sight of their missions. And now they get it. Now the Eternal, now the Celestial talking about, man, what y'all niggas are done? Come with me. You know what I'm saying?
And then also that they didn't know the truth until, of course, the light was passed on to them.
True. And, of course, that's why I said I think RSM also represents your subconscious as well as the person judging you. Because think about it like this. It wasn't until they got enough light until they realized the truth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I'm on fire right now. Come on now. I'm going to slap this knee real quick. Goddamn. Because, look, it wasn't until, like I said, it wasn't until they realized what they were doing on this planet until they decided to do what they did. That's your subconscious. That's not, that's RSM represents that. Okay, now that I know what I'm here to do, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He is the subconscious, you know what I'm saying? Man. And because they didn't know how to utilize their subconscious, they stopped Tiamat, as in they stopped creation. You see what I'm saying? Ooh, come on now. Tiamat was sleeping, just like Cthulhu. He was answering his call. Come on now. Ooh, I'm on fire.
Man, it's like in the Matrix, when they finally realize what's going on, how everything changes. It's like that realization, that breakthrough moment.
Mm-hmm, that's Kundalini, you know what I'm saying? Kundalini awakening. And like I said, I definitely had a lot to talk about because, you know, like I said, I was reading the comic before it came out. I didn't even finish the comic before I seen the movie, but I finished like 150 pages. And I said, okay, this is enough. I need to know. I don't need to read this whole nonsense. You know what I'm saying? But everything. Say what?
I was saying 150 out of 400, my boy.
Yeah, it was enough. It was enough. The dialogue, you know how old stuff, dialogue started getting real rough.
Yeah.
They be telling you everything they thinking down to the T. I'd be like, all right, that was too many words. We're going to have to skip this next page.
Mm.
Turn a page, I see more than like five thought bubbles in one box. I said, oh, yeah, I'm turning this page. And I ain't even reading that. But I definitely recommend this movie. And it's good to watch it with like, when you can actually see what's going on, it makes so much more sense. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just from everything, like I said, I focus more on the deviants. I really wanted more screen time of the deviants, to because once I started seeing Crow shapeshift, I started realizing, oh, okay, this is representing us. You know what I'm saying? I said, mm-hmm. The more light he gets, the stronger he gets, the better he gets, the more human he gets. I said, if he killed all the Eternals, he probably would have been eternal. You see what I'm saying?
Facts.
That was on the way to that.
Literally, and think about how powerful he was just off killing what, two?
Ajax and Gilgamesh. Yeah, two.
Right. Oh, before we end this, it was another point I wanted to make with Icarus that I found out like a few minutes before we started recording. All right, so right now in space, there's this star called Betelgeuse, right? That's been in supernova for like 500 years or something like that.
Okay.
I believe that is the star that Icarus flew himself into. I don't know if it's the sun. I think I'm pretty sure.
He didn't fly into the sun? Really?
I mean, okay, look, in the movie, yes, he probably flew into the sun. But I'm saying that sun and that probably represented Betelgeuse. I say that because there's a lot of correlation between the you know, all the ancient tribe. I remember the Aboriginals in Australia as well as the Dogon tribe. They were pointing to Sirius C and Sirius Major and Minor, but they were also pointing at Betelgeuse as well. Okay. In relation to the energy, and it had the years pretty close too about when Betelgeuse would start emitting this energy. Betelgeuse also correlates with the age of Aquarius energy too, which would make perfect sense why Icarus flew into Betelgeuse, right? Because he said he represents that old Christian complex dying. That's why he killed himself in the sun, that Betelgeuse energy, because the Betelgeuse energy is coming along with the age of Aquarius. Remember, we did that episode. The age of Aquarius represents new thinking, understanding, you know what I'm saying? Intelligence, mm-hmm. Information.
And he couldn't function with knowing his whole world was a lie. Well, right,
he couldn't fathom that world, so he had to go. You see what I'm saying? Universe 7-3 said, you ain't going to be able to make it here. You got to dip. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm with you.
Right? And, of course, don't take everything we say. Research the star Betelgeuse. Then, if you can, look at some find some stuff you can on ancient civilizations pointing towards Betelgeuse, understanding the energy it has. You know what I'm saying? It's the energy associated with Betelgeuse. That's why it's such a huge star. And I think the reason why they noticed it was because it's been a supernova for so long, like almost 700 years or something like that.
Man, but it's so far away, so like all of that light that's just not reaching us.
Yeah, I think it's the ninth brightest star in the sky. I think it's the ninth brightest star. It's in the Orion. It's in the Orion constellation too. Where they also
it's in Orion's belt.
Not the belt, just the constellation.
It might be one of his shoulders.
And I think they said there's actually a whole story called Orion's Story where they talk about Betelgeuse in relation to like this time period. So I think Eternals is so important because everything about it is eternal. You can't look at it with a regular state. Most people said they were bored with it. It was in a sense of a good movie, comic book movie, I loved it. Top three for me. You know, I'm a nerd. On a metaphysical sense, I'm going to put it bottom tier because it's base level stuff. I was looking at it. I was reading that movie inside out. I said, oh, yeah, this right here. I know what this is. You know what I'm saying? But everything from the Unimind to the characters, what they displayed, the energy. Another thing that represented how humanity gets to you, remember Fastos, right? Who They're derived from Hephaestus. Remember how he created the ball? He felt he was so hurt with humanity, right?
After he created the atomic bomb.
Think about how contradictive that was, because you've been helping them with every other war. You know what I'm saying? You stayed out of the wars. You've seen what they've done to each other in the past, yet you think by creating a bomb, you're going to change it. You see what I'm saying? He just made him more happy.
He was of the mindset that he could just give him a little push in technology. They were going to just make it to only peacemaking and evolving. But, you know, they tried to take the era of, like, you know, war and destruction.
He probably made a damn cotton gin.
He probably fucked up. They working too hard. Let me go help him out real quick. Oh, hell yeah. Now we can hire more.
What you doing? He said, "Oh, you know, we need people to use the gins."
Well, you supposed to use it yourself. Now I got people for that. Hey, boy, that's sick.
Oof. Rest in peace to Fastow, that man. Why he got props? I know he made some stuff he wasn't supposed to. I'm telling you,
bro. I ain't gonna lie, bro. All them think of all stuff in human history where like took a jump technology, but that could have been him, bro.
Yeah, he could have folded people. Yeah. I'm telling you, he was probably telling Tesla, "Nah, you don't need this." He was probably Albert Einstein and them niggas. Let me show you about how it really worked. But on that note, we're gonna go ahead and wrap this episode up. We hope y'all enjoy it. You should definitely go take a look at the movie, and you should definitely go follow the page if you ain't following the page now. Leave reviews, you know what I'm saying? All the good jazz.
Yeah. But definitely do the page stuff first, because you know Marvel ain't paying us money to advertise. So until then, definitely.
Who you telling? Marvel is not the movie ain't make a whole bunch of money, and they going, this is free promotion. So y'all better go follow the page.
If you get an ad in here, some future going forward, then you know what happened. You're welcome.
Facts. Without further ado, you all know the outro.
Yes, sir. From men to kings.
And from kings to gods.
This has been Fresh Fair Entertainment. Peace, family.
And we outie.